CBS Radio presents Radio Beat. Tonight from Beirut, Washington, and New York, an exclusive interview with the president of Lebanon, Camille Chamoun. Asking the questions will be CBS News correspondents Richard Coulson in Beirut, Stuart Novins in New York, and Howard K. Smith in Washington. Now from New York, here is CBS News correspondent Stuart Novins.
It used to be in the days before World War I that the Balkans were considered to be the tinderbox of Europe and of the world. In the last 20 years or so, it has been the Middle East which has become the sensitive area. It is an arena both of intrinsic problems native to the countries of the area, and it has also become the arena, in a sense, the victim of tensions produced by the so-called Cold War. The current crisis in Lebanon reflects those combined tensions. The Lebanese are engaged in what is, for all practical purposes, a kind of civil war. The Lebanese charge that the rebels fighting the government are being infiltrated into their country and supplied from across the Syrian border by the United Arab Republic. President Nasser of the UAR has denied this. Now, on a motion from Lebanon, the question of providing a UN force to seal the border is being explored at the United Nations. It is against this backdrop that we have the privilege now of talking directly with President Camille Chamoun of Lebanon. President Chamoun is in his office in Beirut. With him is CBS News correspondent Richard Coulson, who regularly covers Lebanon. In our Washington studios is Howard K. Smith of CBS News, whose Washington beat includes the world of international affairs. This reporter, of course, is in New York. We hope we can tie all these elements together by shortwave and find out directly for you just what the president of Lebanon thinks about the current situation. Mr. President, I hope you can hear us.
Yes, if I'm ready.
Then, Mr. President, let me start with a basic question. Do you feel that the situation there is deteriorating tonight, or do you have optimism that this problem can be settled and without the danger of it spreading into something bigger?
There is no danger of seeing the situation deteriorating in the next 2 days. If we can stop, or if the United Nations observers can stop infiltration, then it would be possible to put an end to the rebellion by our own forces. If, on the contrary, infiltration is going on the same large scale, then the situation might develop into a much bigger issue.
Mr. President, this is Howard Smith in Washington. Some aspects of the conflict are mystifying to the American public. I would like to ask you, what exactly was the original cause of the trouble in Lebanon?
Well, it is simply the desire of the United Arab Republic to dominate the policy of this country.
Well, it is sometimes said that the original cause was a decision by you to try to be elected for a second term as president. Is there any truth in that?
The election or re-election of a president in any country is simply a domestic affair. It happened in the past that Lebanon has elected many presidents. He has re-elected one president, and nothing happened of that kind between government and opposition. The fact that there is an armed rebellion today, and that this armed rebellion has been assisted with financial support, military equipment, volunteers, and terrorists coming from Egypt and Syria, is the proof that the domestic issue was only a pretext for the United Arab Republic to start this dragon with the ultimate aim of dominating the policy of Lebanon. This is Dick Carlson in Lebanon. Mr. President,
I would like to ask what the timetable is now. Do you intend to take the Lebanese case back to the Security Council again?
Well, all depends how the situation is going to develop. If the situation threatens to deteriorate, then we might go very quickly before the Security Council. If, on the contrary, we see that we can stop this rebellion through our own means, there will be no need to the Security Council, to go to the Security Council.
Well, Mr. President, do you see any possibility that the military situation here could deteriorate so rapidly that you wouldn't have time to get anyone here to help you?
I don't think so.
Mr. President, this is New York again. It has been suggested that you might call on the United States and or Great Britain for help, but you have said that it would be within the structure of the UN Charter. Could you tell us under what circumstances you might invoke Western military aid, and would that assistance necessarily have to come under a United Nations flag?
Any country victim of a direct or an indirect aggression could make use of the provisions of Article 51 of the Charter and invoke the principle of self-defense. This defense can be individual or collective. If it takes the collective course, then we would have to ask friendly nations or nations in the free world to come to our support.
Mr. President, are there any existing agreements, or have you been given any reason to believe that you could call on the United States for such assistance?
What we feel is that the issues at stake are not only the independence of Lebanon. It is stability, peace, and security in all the Middle East.
The circuit to Beirut seems to be going bad, and so this is what President Shimon has said. What we feel is that the issues at stake are not only the independence of Lebanon, it is stability, peace, and security in all the Middle East. So the weight of this struggle should not be laid on the shoulders of the Lebanese government alone or on the Lebanese army, but it should have the support of all the free world, including the United States, Britain, and the West.
Would this be within the frame of context of the Eisenhower Doctrine, in your opinion, Mr. President?
It will be, anyway, within the framework of the United Nations. And as far as the United States is concerned, it will be under the provision which says that United States forces are entitled to intervene in any place where the United States has a vital interest.
This is Dick Carlson in Beirut again. Mr. President, as you know, some people here in this part of the world, especially the opposition, say that this whole thing started because Lebanon signed the Eisenhower Doctrine, that this caused your original trouble with President Nasser. Do you think that this is true?
This is not true. The trouble which started between the Lebanese government and Nasser's government derived from a disagreement, a basic disagreement on foreign policy. Nasser is for what he calls positive neutralism, which, to our opinion, is a substitute for international communism, while we have kept intact the basic policy which has been followed for a long time by all Lebanese governments, which is a policy of friendly relations with the West.
Mr. President, this is Washington again. Some of the reports from Lebanon that we have seen here say that the army of the Lebanon is not fighting all out against the rebels. It is not fighting with full vigor against the rebels. Is this so?
I'm afraid it is a wrong impression to a large extent. The Lebanese army is a small army, and it is stretched over all the area which is covered by Lebanon, over all the country. So it has to keep the defensive because she is not in number enough to be able to start attacking any place with enough strength. But I am optimistic that the army could carry her job provided there is no more massive infiltration through our borders.
Mr. President, this is New York again. You have used the word armed rebellion several times. That would seem to indicate that you think of the difficulties as a civil war. I wonder how you could clarify the question as to how Western intervention could be implemented in a civil war, which is basically an internal affair.
There is no civil war. It is an armed rebellion which had the support, the full support of the United Arab Republic. And as such, it means interference from another state threatening the independence of Lebanon. This comes under the provisions of the Charter of the United Nations.
Mr. President, some of those of us who are working here in Beirut all the time wonder really how Anglo-American intervention could be a successful thing from the Anglo-American standpoint. How is this going to work if it happens, for example? How are we going to occupy the country?
As I've always said, we intend to do the job by ourselves. And I hope that we'll be able to carry it by our own means. Yet if it were to ask for aid, it will be either for us, either to go to the United Nations and ask for a police force, or to make use of the provisions of Article 51 of the Charter. Both the provisions which provide for police force or the provisions which provide for aid in case of self-defense permit any force which comes to this country to take part with the official force of the government to check any aggression directed against this country.
This is Washington once more. Mr. Carlson's question has really considered very seriously here. In the view of unofficial opinion, we are in a serious dilemma. If we do not intervene, then our stock with our friends will be very low. But if we do intervene, it is feared that Arab nationalism will be inflamed against us. Do you think that this dilemma is a true one?
Well, we haven't yet asked for your intervention.
No.
No. But supposing we, as I said, we make use of Article 51 of the Charter, then it will be to the friendly powers to see what are the issues at stake. If the issues mean that the West or the free world is going to lose what we call the Middle East.
Due to the bad circuit, we will repeat what President Shimon of Lebanon has just said. No, but supposing, as I said, we use Article 51 of the Charter, then it will be up to the friendly powers to see what are the issues at stake. If they should mean that the West or the free world is going to lose the Middle East or see the Middle East threatened in its peace and stability, Well, I think that the free world has to assume its responsibilities and not leave Lebanon alone to carry this problem.
Mr. President, do you have any concern that Anglo-American intervention might bring in, directly or indirectly, Soviet intervention?
If we act according to the Charter of the United Nations, no Russian intervention would be justified.
Well, sir, would you welcome the presence of Soviet troops as part of a UN force in your country?
I am speaking of aid coming from the free world.
President Shamoon, I would like to ask you about two opinions that I have read in periodicals recently by experts on the Middle East. One, a British periodical, suggests that it would help solve the problem if you were to state clearly your intention to depart from the presidency when your present term is over. And two, an American periodical has suggested that it might solve the problem if you were to leave the country until the next election, letting the commander of the army have temporary charge. Do you think these opinions are valid?
I don't share at all this opinion. Domestic issue should be settled along the principles which has always governed our policy. We are a democratic country, and we have our problems. We have always had our problems and our differences.
Again, the circuit seems to be going bad from Beirut, Lebanon. Again, I will repeat President Shamoon's comments. I don't share at all these opinions. The domestic issue should be settled along the principles which have always governed our policy. We are a democratic country, and we have our problems. We have always had our problems, our differences, and they have always been settled under the roof of the parliament or through the weight of public opinion. So the case now is completely different. It is not a question of election or re-election of the president of Lebanon. It is interference from the United Arab Republic, which has created the actual situation. It is simply a matter of knowing whether we are able, through our own means, to put an end to this armed rebellion and to this aggression, or whether we are going to ask the United Nations to intervene to put an end to this rebellion, or to ask the free world under Article 51 to carry this intervention.
Mr. President, could you clarify for us, please, sir, your personal intentions as to re-election for the presidency?
After a meeting of the cabinet, which I have presided personally, the Prime Minister, who is entitled to speak in the name of the government, has made a statement assuring that his government is not going to ask for to amend the Constitution. This puts an end to any speculation on that question, and I have nothing to add to the statement of the Prime Minister.
Mr. President, in relation to the Arab League, do you believe that there is a danger that the Arab League may come to be dominated by President Nasser's United Arab Republic?
Well, I think practically and very unfortunately, there is no more an Arab League. And that Nasser's policy is to a very large extent responsible for the practical death of this institution.
Mr. President, here in Beirut in the past day or two, you have said that President Nasser wants to lay hands on Lebanese policy. But, as you know, he says that he wants Lebanon to remain independent. How do you jibe these two contradictory statements?
Well, that's what he said after they launched their aggression against King Hussein, April 1957. We know that Jordan was intended to be the first victim of Nasser's domination, and we know also that Lebanon would be the next victim. So I have no confidence in any words which Nasser can say about it.
Mr. President, in relation again to the Arab League, sir, in view of your answer to my recent question, will you now disassociate Lebanon from formal membership in the Arab League, which you say is now dead?
Certainly we are not going to drop out of Arab League. On the contrary, we would like to maintain it and strengthen it, so nobody would be able to dominate this institution. But we realize with sorrow that for the time being, it is practically dead, and Nasser's policy is certainly responsible for this death.
Mr. President, this is Washington once more. I would like to ask you, the Russians 2 days ago said that if the Western powers in any way intervene, with the UN's approval or not, Russia would then take action. Does this disturb you in any degree?
Not at all.
Well, Mr. President, you have not been able to tell us what Mr. Hammarskjöld said, but can you say whether you were satisfied with Mr. Hammarskjöld's visit?
Well, I think you can as well ask Mr. Hammarskjöld himself, since he must be now in New York.
Yes.
All what I can say is that Mr. Hammarskjöld was optimistic, and he said that he was sincerely optimistic and refused to say anything else. So whether we should share his optimism or not, this remains to be seen within the next 48 hours or 3 days,
yes,
three coming days.
May I ask you just one more question from Washington? Are you satisfied with America's general foreign policy in the Middle East, or are there any criticisms of it you would make?
I would say yes.
Mr. President, you have said that Mr. Hammarskjöld's optimism will be tested by events of the next 3 days. Could you tell us, sir, what you expect might happen within that three-day period?
Well, I can say 3 days, as I would say 5 days. The question is, we would like to see whether the smuggling of arms and the illegal passage of volunteers through the Lebanese border is going to continue or not. Well, if it is stopped, and I am afraid it is not, then Mr. Hammarskjöld would have been right to be optimistic. Otherwise, his optimism wouldn't mean anything.
Mr. President, do you see any chance here in Beirut that this infiltration can be stopped with a small force of observers?
No.
How many observers do you think it would take?
I don't think that observers would be able to stop interference, whatever may be their number, as observers. Because they haven't got the force to check it. They can only see that arms has been coming, volunteers have been coming, but they wouldn't have any force to stop that. They would have to send a report in that way.
Mr. President, here in New York, there is some speculation as to what might happen at the United Nations with the Lebanese request. It is suggested that if the request is brought before the Security Council, it may be vetoed there by the Soviet Union. Would you like to see the request transferred to a special session of the General Assembly under those circumstances?
Well, if we ask for a force of the United Nations, then we have to follow the procedure, you know, to go before the Security Council. If we get a vote, a majority vote, from the Security Council, and it is vetoed, then We will have to go before the General Assembly.
Mr. President, here in Beirut sometimes it seems rather unusual to us that so many of the opposition leaders are permitted to walk around really quite freely. In the early days of the rebellion, they even went from city to city unhampered. One of them even had a curfew passed. Why aren't they arrested?
This is part of our liberal system of dealing with opposition during the first...
Again, due to the bad circuit, we will repeat President Shimon's remarks. Unfortunately, this is part of our liberal system of dealing with the opposition during the first 2 weeks of the rebellion. Now they don't walk as freely because already warrants have been issued by the judge.
President Shamoun, I wanted to ask you about the United Nations once more. If an emergency force were sent to the Lebanon, what do you think its constitution should be? Would it be better if it consisted only of troops of small and neutral nations? Or would you prefer such a force to contain the troops of a great power like the United States and Britain?
It's up to the Security Council to take the decision on that. And it depends on the size of the police forces which are going to be needed. If small nations can provide these forces, well, that would be quite all right and even better. If not, they will have to take these forces somewhere.
Mr. President, how long do you think a United Nations police force would have to stay in Lebanon?
Well, I don't expect to see them staying very long. 6 months, perhaps.
Could we ask, Mr. President, how you arrive at that estimate?
Well, because I suppose that it will, if we can stop all kinds of infiltration during these 6 months, the problem would be over by that time. Completely over.
Well, here in Beirut, President Shimon, it doesn't seem to me that the opposition is particularly ready to give up its arms very easily.
Well, if they lose any hope of assistance from outside...
Yes, but can the prestige of the United Arab Republic and the prestige of Russia not fail to be involved in this thing? Don't they have to react if you ask for foreign intervention on your side?
So far, the Arab Republic has taken such an interest in our affairs. Nothing has appeared yet from the Russian side. But anyway, there must be a protection in favor of small nations. And one way or another, the free world has got to protect the independence of Lebanon if this independence is threatened by a more powerful state.
President Shamoun, is the problem now facing your country exclusively a political problem, or are there overtones of religious conflict?
If you are asking about the local issues...
Yes, sir.
These are political problems. If you ask about the whole situation created by this armed rebellion, it's an international question. Political and not religious, anyway.
Smith in Washington?
I don't think we have anything here to do except to thank President Shamoun for very frank answers to some forthright questions.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you very much, indeed.
You have been listening to Radio Beat, bringing you an exclusive transatlantic interview with President Camille Shamoun of Lebanon. Participating in this exchange were CBS News correspondents Richard Coulson in Beirut, Stuart Novins in New York, and Howard K. Smith in Washington. Radio Beat was produced by George Vikas, supervised by Ralph Backlund, and was a Unit 1 presentation of CBS News.
Tokyo on toast? Not exactly, but you will find direct reports from the major news centers of the world waiting for you at breakfast time 7 days a week on CBS Radio's World News Roundup. All through the day, every night, CBS newsmen are on the job learning the who, what, when, why, and where of current events. At an hour when most Americans are buttering their morning toast, CBS News overseas correspondents are called on to report on events they know about firsthand. Start your day well informed. Join us on most of these same stations for the CBS Radio World News Roundup. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.